From KLW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Mission District.
Fremont.
El Cerrito.
O-Town, baby.
Lake Merritt.
Temescal.
Tenderloin.
Treasure Island.
Richmond, California.
Coming up, we'll get an update on local Occupy movements.
It's time to start actually organizing instead of just occupying, you know. It's time to actually get out there, talk to people.
And we'll hear the first in our series of commentaries about Occupy.
Income inequality now tops both race and immigration as the greatest source of tension in our society.
Even before there was Occupy, there was 87-year-old Yen Hom, who stood her ground when they tried to take her home in Oakland.
What the city did was they just tore everything down and left everything demolished. Something which can't be done today anymore.
That's coming up today on Cross Currents. Last Friday, 18 Occupy Cal protesters were detained in the early morning after setting up another on-campus encampment in Berkeley. On Monday, around 700 demonstrators convened at San Quentin to occupy the prison. And tomorrow evening, San Francisco's Occupy Bernal is hosting a forum to discuss the more than 80 families facing eviction or foreclosure in that neighborhood. The movement is still going strong, but it's also having some growing pains. Zappo Montag, a longtime Occupy Oakland activist, has been feeling them.
There have been people who kind of felt like, well, look, we got so much support when they tear gas us, that like maybe the way to go is to like initiate these conflicts and then it's going to bring more people in. But the fact is, that doesn't work very often. You know, the first couple times people were supportive or sympathetic to us, and over time people get either turned off by things they see on the media or they get scared.
Lately, the Occupy movement has been accused of being fragmented and lacking a clear message. Reporter Joaquin Palomino has been following the story. I sat down with him and asked what he thought about that criticism.
I think that, I mean, especially in Oakland, there's been some pretty noticeable divisions. A lot of the more quote-unquote peaceful protesters feel that their form of protest, that their message is regularly overshadowed by the more confrontational elements, which in my opinion has led to, it is one of the reasons why there's been sort of a dwindling participation in the movement in Oakland. But that second question about it doesn't have a clear objective, I sort of disagree with that. I think that the movement's actually gotten a lot more focused, and it's hooked up with a lot of activist organizations, a lot of NGOs, and it's really organizing around specific causes now.
Like foreclosure in Bernal.
Yeah, like foreclosure, like prison issues in California. And it's hooking up with a lot of longstanding organizations that have.
And you think years. That makes it a more focused message rather than a more dispersed message?
I think that it's now, where in the beginning I feel like it was more of a place to think about ideas and to brainstorm how we can make society better, how people can make society better, rather. And now I feel like people are actually taking those actions and they're taking those steps on a variety of fronts, on whatever causes inspire them.
And so what's going to be happening next in the Occupy movement as we hit spring here?
Nationally, there's a few very, very big protests that are being planned. It was actually, if you remember back in December, it was when all the camps were being taken down, they actually mentioned that a lot of people were talking about how this might be the time to move on to the next stage, to start doing something besides setting up camps and just quote-unquote occupying places. So in the springtime, there's a big May Day protest planned. It's a big general strike, and it's going to be international. Oakland's participating here in the Bay Area, San Francisco. And that, I think, should be a pretty huge event. There's also in Chicago, and I think it's in May as well, there's the G8 and NATO summit. And so they're planning a big month-long occupation of Chicago, which is supposed to bring in people from around the world.
And what's happening here locally?
So essentially all of the Bay Area camps have been taken down. There's still general assemblies that are being held regularly, but there's no focal point anymore.
You mean like a civic center plaza?
Yeah, there's no Justin Herman Plaza. There's no Frank Ogawa anymore. They're there for general assemblies, but there's no camps.
Mm-hmm.
But what has happened is the general assemblies first off, have sort of spread. So there's General Assemblies now sometimes in Fruitvale. There's sometimes in the Mission. And it's also broken off into a lot of these smaller groups, as I was talking about. So in Oakland, there's a bunch. There's Occupy the Hood, which is doing a lot about school closures. There's five schools that are slated for closure next year in Oakland. So they're working on addressing that issue, trying to support public education in that city. Occupy San Quentin is organizing to improve prison conditions. And there's just a pretty big protest, as you mentioned, just earlier this week. And then there's also Occupy Bernal Hill, which is an interesting community group, which is focusing on foreclosures in that neighborhood. And they've actually stopped a few of these foreclosure auctions.
You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Holly Kernan here with reporter Joaquin Palomino, who's been following the Occupy Bay Area movement. And let's hear a clip from the panel discussion that just happened, Which Way Forward, where a number of Occupy activists discussed the future of the movement. This is Occupy Washington, D.C. activist Margaret Flowers talking about the new type of organizing that's grown out of the Occupy movement.
But now we have a job to do. Now that that energy has been released, how do we funnel that into positive and constructive change? It's time to move out into the communities and to start discussing the real issues that affect us in our communities, the foreclosures, the lack of jobs, and to find solutions, to come together and find solutions for those. We need to start meeting our human needs now.
That was Occupy activist Margaret Flowers. And let's also hear from Zappo Montag, where he's talking about what he calls a vanguard mentality.
By vanguardist, I'm talking about behaviors that kind of decide for the community or for the people what the movement entails, as opposed to letting the community kind of have a larger input. It feels like some people feel like they know the way and they need to lead the way and people will join.
That's Zappo Montag, a longtime Occupy Oakland activist and a critic of some of its current decisions, Joaquin.
Yeah, so I spoke with Zappo, and he was actually still, I want to make clear, he's still a big supporter of the movement. He's still heavily involved in the Occupy movement in Oakland, but he feels like it's sort of become, at its core, this sort of self-selected group, because as I mentioned, a lot of people, a lot of the more peaceful protesters have been discouraged because
alienated.
Yeah, he used that word as well, alienated.
And I know that a lot of people in Oakland are resentful of the services that are going to, you know, from the police, et cetera, to the Occupy movement and taking away from a city that's so financially strapped already.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, and especially when you have all of these just showdowns with the police regularly in a city that is struggling and that is crime-ridden. A lot of people don't think that's a good image to have for the Occupy camp.
So let's hear again from Zappo Montag about what he wants to see in the future.
We've finally gone through enough kind of mistakes tactically and strategically that people are really now finally really questioning, what is the strategy? Have we had one? We are people who believe that we want major changes. We want to help make that happen, but we also believe that we're not going to impose that on people. We need to find a way that we can engage everybody and find out what everybody wants that change to be.
Again, that's Zappo Montag, Occupy Oakland critic and supporter, talking about what sort of change the Occupy movement hopes to have. So what impact has it already had, Joaquin?
I mean, one of the biggest impacts that the Occupy movement has had has just been starting this conversation and this debate about economic inequality in the U.S. It's been a long time since there's been a big, broad movement that's centered around the distribution of wealth in this country. It's also had some really big effects on policy. It's an interesting thing that happened in November. Florida Representative Ted Deutsch introduced the Occupied Bill, which is a loaded acronym for Outlawing Corporate Cash, Undermining the Public Interest in Our Elections and Democracy.
So is that sort of a backlash to Citizens United?
It is, yeah.
A response?
Yeah, it was it was meant to sort of end corporate personhood and take money out of, or take huge sums of money out of elections.
And did it pass?
It didn't get very far, but it still was introduced, which in my opinion is a pretty big deal, especially with that acronym Occupied. It was sort of an homage to the Occupy movement itself.
And you're saying that you've seen the Occupy movement really change the conversation in this country.
Yeah. Another really interesting thing that happened last November, when the federal government was talking about cutting certain social services, talking about cutting Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security in response to the debt ceiling crisis. And some say that because Occupy had put this message of economic inequality at sort of the center of political discussion, of social discussion, that couldn't get very far, because as part of the bill, as the Republicans presented it, it would also cut taxes for the richest 1%. And so a lot of politicians just in this political environment didn't think it was feasible to cut these services while also cutting taxes.
And we're talking with Joaquin Palomino about the Occupy movement, what it's accomplished so far, and its future. Let's listen to Margaret Flowers, another Occupy activist, speaking about the movement's direct impact on national policy regarding foreclosures.
There's been a tremendous effort to occupy the homes, to prevent foreclosures and evictions. President Obama was doing everything he could to pressure the attorney generals of the states to let the banks off the hook in this foreclosure crisis, to give them immunity from prosecution. That was the direction that he was heading. But because of the Occupy movement, although the provisions that went through are woefully short of what's needed to turn around this foreclosure crisis, he did not give immunity to the banks, and in fact is giving some money to the states so that people can sue the banks who treated them fraudulently.
So this was pretty exciting for me to hear, because, first I should make it clear that I support the movement. I want to see it succeed. And so following it and being a part of it, sometimes I feel like it's its own bubble, and that it's not sort of branching out of itself, that it's all self-contained. But actually hearing how it's affecting policy and speaking to people who I would have no idea, I would have never guessed that they would have supported the causes of Occupy or supported the movement itself, saying that they're in support of it, in support of its goals. I mean, to me, it's all just really inspiring to hear.
And that's Joaquin Palomino. He's a reporter with KALW News, and he's been following the evolution of the local Occupy movements. Do you think the Occupy movement has been inspiring? What do you feel it is really achieving? Local journalist Ira Eisenberg has been thinking about it, and he sent us this commentary.
If you assumed, as did I, that the coming of winter would mean the end of the Occupy Wall Street movement, well, guess again. Whether because of the unseasonably mild weather prevailing here and elsewhere, Occupy Wall Street encampments stubbornly persist, and despite increasingly more aggressive measures taken against them by local authorities, the movement appears to be growing. Occupy the Dream demonstrations highlighted the celebration of Martin Luther King's birthday in Sacramento, Oakland, San Francisco, and many other places around the nation early in January, and an Occupy Congress rally was held in Washington, D.C. on January 17th. Yet there are those, particularly on the political right, the mushy middle, and the corporate media, who claim not to understand what Occupy Wall Streeters are complaining about, or what they want. It brings to mind the opening line of that immortal 1960s anthem by the seminal San Francisco folk rock band, Buffalo Springfield, that goes like this.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear.
But to call Occupy Wall Street a movement at this point is not so much a misnomer as it is a media invention and mischaracterization. Whatever else one might call it, Occupy Wall Street is less a true movement than a spontaneous outburst of dissent over the great and growing economic inequality in this country. According to a recent report by the U.S. Census Bureau, just 10% of Americans today control some 56% of the nation's wealth. Nor is it an especially radical outburst. For as the few academics and journalists who have bothered to actually examine Occupy Wall Street up close and personally have reported, those camping and marching in cities around the nation largely represent not some alienated fringe, but America's broad middle class. And as much as some might wish to deny even the existence of economic classes in this country, income inequality now tops both race and immigration as the greatest source of tension in our society. A recent survey of over 2,000 adult Americans by the respected Pew Research Center found that two-thirds of them were convinced that strong class conflict does exist in this country. Occupy Wall Street is not a movement because it has no top-down leadership, no organizing ideology, and no political agenda other than to end the flagrant fraud and abuse perpetrated by a tiny cadre of self-dealing politicians and financial types who have undermined our once vibrant and egalitarian economy. What Occupy Wall Street speaks loudest to me about is as mainstream as apple pie and was summarized nearly a century ago by the late, great U.S. Supreme Court Justice Louis Brandeis, who said, "We may have democracy, or we may have wealth concentrated in the hands of a few, but we can't have both."
Ira Eisenberg is a local journalist, and we'd like to hear what you think about the Occupy movement. The number to call is 415-264-7106. Again, just leave us a message at 415-264-7106, and we'll try to get your call on the air. This is Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan. When you think of inspiring Bay Area activists, your list may include famous people like Daniel Ellsberg, Angela Davis, Huey Newton, or Medea Benjamin. But the Bay is full of activists. Our area inspires it, sometimes in the unlikeliest of people, like the late Oakland resident Yen Hom.
My mother seemed to have found her voice and was able to say, "Oh, what's the next step? Let the sheriffs come?" The sheriffs would come and say, "Well, let them drag me out."
That was Art, Yen Hom's son. Yen's story takes place in Oakland's Chinatown. Back in 1993, the opening of the Pacific Renaissance Plaza seemed to be a real victory for the neighborhood, and it signaled the change from a Chinese-centric neighborhood to a more multicultural and pan-Asian identity. But 10 years later, the Pacific Renaissance was again in the center of a neighborhood battle. At age 87, Yen Hom was right in the middle of it. Melody Sage brings us that story.
Just 10 years after the Pacific Renaissance Plaza opened in 1993, the low-income residential units there automatically converted to market rate. One of the tenants was 87-year-old Yen Hom. Her son, Art Hom, remembers how she got the news.
She got this notice in the mail that asked her that she had to either come up with about $300,000 to buy the apartment or move.
Occupants of the building's 50 subsidized units received eviction notices in April of 2003. At first, Yen Hom couldn't even understand the letter, which was written in English. Her son, Art, had to read it for her.
My mother felt hopeless and helpless, and we all felt pretty vulnerable. We realized at that time you were thinking you had no choices.
The eviction stunned the mostly elderly Chinese residents. They said no one had told them the units would stop being affordable. Still, Art Hom says most of them quietly began moving out.
Even at great financial sacrifice, and you know how disruptive this could be, the family life, what have you, elders don't respond to this kind of disruption without affecting their health, so we had deaths, illnesses, relapses, and it was a very painful time.
But Yen Hom decided to fight her eviction. Art Hom says his mother was empowered by the battle.
My mother seemed to have found her voice and was able to say, "Oh, what's the next step? Let the sheriffs come?" The sheriffs would come and she said, "Well, let them drag me out."
Yen Hom was conducting a live-in.
My mother was taking a huge risk. It's a huge cultural barrier where we are not allowed and we don't feel like we should allow people to know about our private affairs. And not having money and not having political power and having something is very disgraceful to people. And so, and the culture is to keep it to yourself and quietly submit.
But But Yan Ham had faced many displacements in her life. She left her home village in China when the Japanese invaded in World War II, and she fled to the U.S. in the politically turbulent years after the war. Art Ham says this time, his mom refused to go.
And so my mother was willing to stand up to it and maybe go to court, possibly even lose. She made was willing to make the sacrifice. So I was quite proud of her, and to this very day, I'm still very proud of her.
Another family was standing up to the evictions, too. Francis Chang's parents, who also lived at the Pacific Renaissance Plaza, were at a loss. Chang called lawyers, but they turned him away. Finally, desperate for help, he contacted the office of Congressmember Barbara Lee, where he was directed to the Berkeley Community Law Center. Art Ham says he and Chang called the center.
We realized that we actually have more options than we imagined. And one was that we could actually try to fight that eviction. And of course, and we also felt like that was a choice, but can't do it alone.
The local community group, CJWP, or Moving Forward for Peace, joined the fight too. Volunteers went door to door at the Pacific Renaissance Plaza trying to organize tenants to resist the eviction. Half a dozen chose to stay, forming a small but determined tenants' rights group. And with the help of the city of Oakland, they filed a lawsuit against the Pacific Renaissance developer, Lawrence Chan. The plaza had been built with public money, so advocates argued that the developer had an obligation to the community. And as the fight wore on, an increasingly diverse and intergenerational group of protesters took up the cause. Ham says his mother was celebrated as a hero.
Now, this is quite unusual for an 80-some-year-old woman who all her life has been pretty much not have any political power at all.
Ham remembers bringing his mother to one of the many hearings at City Hall.
And I'm just wheeling my mom up in a wheelchair and see people surrounding her from the outside as we enter the meeting hall, holding signs and doing street theater and doing renditions of my mom's life experience in a mural. It was a quite inspirational experience to be. And actually, we're no longer isolated anymore. And we had a sense of community and a sense of belonging, and feeling heard, validated, understood.
In 2007, they settled out of court. The developer turned over the low-income units to the nonprofit Ibaldzi, ensuring that they would remain below market rate and affordable for future residents. Art and Yan Ham had succeeded, but Yan Ham didn't live to see her victory. She died a year and a half into the lawsuit. Art Ham says the fight gave his mother a sense of purpose at the end of her life.
She was able to join us and make a stand for herself, and I think she felt invigorated by that. No longer the helpless victim, the principles that we fought for are still alive. And that, yes, one 80-some-year-old woman can make a difference, but it takes a whole community organization around it and many, many people to sacrifice a lot of time and energy to stand up for what we believe and work together.
Ham says his mother helped inspire a generation of activists, and he says he hopes that legacy of empowerment endures. In Oakland, I'm Melody Sage for Cross Currents.
That report was produced at Mills College in Oakland. Do you know someone who's fought an eviction or a foreclosure? You can join the discussion at our Facebook page. We're KALW News. You can also find us online at klw.org. You've been listening to Cross Currents from KLW News. The team includes Hana Baba, Julie Kane, Martina Castro, Audrey Dilling, Artiems Konachovs, Casey Miner, Erica Mu, Joaquin Palomino, Rena Palta, Seth Samuel, Stephen Short, and Katie Steyer. Today's show was engineered by Chris Hoff. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Thanks also to City Car Share for providing an alternative transportation option for our reporters. City Car Share is online at citycarshare.org. Also, thanks to you. We are listener-supported radio. Tune in to Cross Currents tomorrow at 5. We'll take you for a ride through San Francisco's film history.
You tell me something. Has this ever happened to you before?
What?
Falling into San Francisco Bay.
It's the Cross Currents movie show, tomorrow at 5. The song you're hearing right now is by Emily Jane White. Most of the songs on her new album were written in Oakland and San Francisco, and you can hear her perform them on Friday at the Swedish American Hall as part of this year's Noise Pop Festival. For Cross Currents, I'm Holly Kernan.
Oh, I woke up today, the red sky.